All right, welcome back to another episode of This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
Hey, you are correct, sir. I'm Dan Fernandez, playing the part of Ed McMahon.
Nice. So let's get into the show.
Yeah, so kind of our C++ episode,
yeah,
if you will.
Yeah, lots of stuff going on.
Yeah, so this first thing is actually the C++ team released the C++ MFC feature pack. So Microsoft Foundation classes, you want to be able to build applications like the Office 2007 Ribbon. All the classes are there. What they did was a guy named Bill Dunlap was looking at, wanted to add these features to make it really easy for C++ developers and other ISVs to build what's called the Fluent UI, which is what the name of the ribbon is. So they actually licensed this from BCGsoft, and now it's part of the Microsoft Foundation classes framework. So this release, and it requires Visual Studio Standard above, lets you build, and this is actually a screenshot of an application. It's not Office. It's not Microsoft Word. It's an application that any end user can build, and you can see, like, that gorgeous UI that
I didn't realize it. I thought that was Office. So somebody built something that looks just like Office.
Build something that looks just like Office, and obviously you have to do the Fluent licensing and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But really cool to get for C++ developers to get all the wonderful things in both Vista and Office.
MFC just keeps on kicking.
Yeah,
it's been around forever.
And there's a number of other language features, too. So language wonks that are following the TR1, like the standardization of C++. There's a bunch of things that were released there as well, in addition to these core libraries.
And where do they learn more?
This was on Soma's blog, but if you go to msdnmicrosoft.com, Visual C.
Okay, great. Cool. What's next? Reduce download time with OptiPNG, LibPNG, or LibJPEG? LibJPEG? I don't know.
Sure. Dan and I are both heavily medicated this week, so things might be a little bit different.
But this is cool. I was reading about this. This is all about how you can maintain the same fidelity of your PNG and your JPEG files, but reducing the file size. So, he goes into a big, long explanation of how it works. It looks at different color palettes and different ways of displaying the exact same image, but while taking up a fewer bytes. But this is really cool to think about running this on your website to, you know, improve the download speed.
Yeah, so what surprised me, and this is a console app, the OptiPNG one, is that it's lossless, meaning like you're not losing any color detail, but yet it's shrinking at 30 to 40%. So it's kind of a no-brainer to run on your production images. And what I'd love to see is something where, like, I literally just have a tool that does it automatically for me. Like, before, as one of the things for when we publish to the website, run it through this tool to optimize every PNG. I mean, literally 30 to 40%, you figure, you know, how many images are there on your typical website? You know, Amazon had, like, I don't know, probably 80 or something. So now the libJPEG, just because the nature of JPEG is lossy, but it's still interesting to see. So if you're running PNGs on your website, definitely check this out.
Yeah, most browsers nowadays have full support for PNGs. I think that IE6 had a problem with transparency on PNGs, but hopefully there's not a lot of people hitting your site that are still using IE6.
Yeah, so cool stuff.
All right. What next?
Microsoft Expression.
Yeah.
So I'm personally a fanboy of Expression Blend, because it's got some pretty cool stuff. And one of the nice things is the Expression team has revamped their landing page. This is actually from Alan URL there. For videos, tutorials, training kits, everything that you'd want to know for all the Expression products. So whether it's Expression Web, Expression Media, whatever. Here's like the one-stop shop to learn about Expression.
Which is great because, I mean, people in our world, developers, aren't necessarily always talented at the design skills. So for you and I that don't know this stuff, we can jump in and learn everything we need.
Right, exactly. Working, you know, as a developer, we're used to probably more sequential, like vertical in code. Working with something like a timeline where you have a left to right and working over sequences can be a new thing.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, but it's cool stuff, and obviously...
And their entire site's done in Flash, right?
Wouldn't that be hilarious?
Yeah, it would be ironic.
Yeah, exactly. So no, it's requires Real Player 6, And
yeah.
All right, so this is actually a conversation point.
It is.
SMS officer. So the Outlook team blog talked about SMS officer as one of the new service that what it effectively does is allows you to send and receive text messages from Outlook. So mm-hmm. I'm running late to a meeting. You know, I get that notification. It actually send me a text message for, hey, where's your meeting? Maybe if in the S Plus it included a link. So I don't even have to have a smartphone to get my calendar on my phone using a service like this.
Right.
Similarly, I can send you a text message directly from Outlook.
And S Plus, by the way.
An S Plus.
Microsoft terminology for a meeting request, right?
Yes.
From the old Schedule Plus tool, and it just kind of sticks around. So I remember my first week at Microsoft, someone said, send an S Plus. I thought it was a typo. I had no idea what it was.
Oh, yeah.
But that's what an S Plus is. But moving along, you know, we were looking at this site, and trying to figure out if it really is free, and it looks like they've got a trial mode where you get about 10 credits,
right?
And after that, you have to pay. And we didn't get far enough in the site before we had to shoot the show to figure out how much it costs. But we started talking before the show about how would you go about building a site or building an application that utilizes SMS. And we would love to hear from people out there if anyone's done something like this before. Our recommended approach, or the thing we came up with, was using an email. Well, okay, Dan came up with it, and I branded it my own, was to use the email. So if you wanted to, you know, send Dan a message, you would say 425-897.
Oh, wow, you're going to get personal. All right.
Yeah, at tmobile.com or whatever, right?
Right, right.
But there's got to be a better way than sending email. So are there APIs for SMS?
I've looked at the key is there are services. British Telecom BT actually has an entire SDK for sending and receiving messages, but we're cheap bastards, right? So you got to find a free service, and I've never actually found a free SMS sending service. And the easiest thing to do is to send an email, and basically you would spam every single provider with that number, because you have to have a number at provider.com.
Right, right.
But the challenges there are you obviously don't know, and now you're sending a bunch of spam. So for, you know, to email one friend, that's 10 friends. But,
yeah.
I mean, you look at something like Twitter, where the majority of people are using cell phones to either update or get notifications and stuff. There's a really popular need for application developers.
But it's kind of a double-edged sword, too, right? If we make it super easy for people to write applications or use applications that can send text messages, I already get SMS spam today, you know, maybe once or twice a month, but I can see that only increasing as we open up the platform. And it's worse than email spam. And email spam, I delete it. It's a little bit of my time, not a huge deal. But with SMS spam, I'm paying for it, right? After a certain threshold, I have to pay for that every month. So I could go...
Can't you get unlimited, though?
You could, but not everyone has unlimited. So before you know it, you know, you could be out of the country for a week, and you could get spammed by a ton of messages, and you're stuck with the bill.
Yeah, actually, there were some high school kids or something that had done that to somebody else. They just spammed the crap out of some number.
Wow.
But yeah, like these are the real challenges. Mm-hmm. Where, damn, there's no reason if it's as easy to send an SMS message as it is to send an email. There's no reason there wouldn't be SMS spam. Like, I'm shocked it hasn't, like, exploded yet already. I just think it's the spam people don't know.
Well, I know that I was listening to NPR the other day, and they said that they do server-side filtering. So they said that that they get millions of messages per month, with which they are able to filter out. And so, you know, the general population
Verizon
doesn't see a lot of those.
Oh, so Verizon is doing that, or...
They do, but if you were to open it up so that you could send from any email address or...
But you can,
you know,
today, though.
Well, right, but... Yeah, you're right.
I don't know how it works. I don't know.
So I'd love to hear from someone in our audience that happens to know.
Yeah. So, and people interested in building some spam apps. And I know Clint, who we're going to feature later, has done some stuff, and he thinks he can personally, with a couple cell phones, choose the next American Idol.
Nice.
which is always good. So here's a quick screenshot. Like I said, my favorite feature is actually sending reminders to mobile phones. So, or next day schedule to mobile phone, which is always like the nice thing to get the... Oh, wow, thank you, my personal concierge. I am doing nothing tomorrow.
I would love to know who Clint wants as the next American Idol. That could be an entire show.
Yeah, we should I think Clint should set up a little, like, you know, take money donations, yeah. Like, just vote for.
Absolutely terrible. All right. Grace Francisco?
Yes.
Talking about, well, you take this one. This is your team.
Network sidebar gadgets. So this is actually one of the things folks in the coffee house were saying. We gotta make sure to give updates. And they launched the Evangelism Network sidebar gadgets. And there's a specific gadget for each channel. So like 8, 9, 10, and so forth. The challenge was, like, these released, I think, the day our video released on Friday, and we had already recorded, so we didn't actually cover this. So here it is, and you can get the straight dope from Grace, and Grace is a PM on program manager on the Evangelism Network team.
Nice. And they look really good, too. I mean, these came from, I can't remember the guy's name, Donovan West. I met him down at Mix.
Oh, yeah?
So, yeah, his team helped us create those.
Yeah, so my only pain is now I'm running that media machine as 64-bit, and 64-bit doesn't like Silverlight and all this other stuff. I know.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Huh. Okay.
And sidebar gadgets. So it's a known bug, and actually, for people that are running this, Grace has a link to the workaround directly in her blog.
Cool. OpenGL with Visual C++ 2008 Express Edition.
So while MFC isn't included in C++ Express, since we talked about those cool controls that you can't actually use C++ Express, here's another great thing, and this is Neil Galloway. And Neil's gone through the trouble of documenting every single change that you have to make in the configuration of C++ Express out of the box. So things like where it literally just won't compile, you have to change the language settings and a bunch of different settings. Hmm. It's about 8 pages of things you have to do to get OpenGL to work just right in Express. The nice thing is you can just follow Neil's guide step by step.
Nice. And OpenGL, of course, being really popular for game creators, you know, if they don't want to use DirectX.
Right.
Or just really any graphical application.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Death threats.
Yeah. Jeez. All right.
Awkward. What are you using technology for? It looks like you're writing a death threat. Oh, geez.
Phoenix. I'm not going to talk about this one. This is rocket science over my head.
Yeah, we're supposed to do the Jamaican, right? This is memory tracing.
Runtime profiling, man.
Code coverage.
Ahead of time and JIT compilers.
Fault injection.
Code coverage. Did you already do that one?
Oh, yeah. No. JIT compiler.
So Phoenix, new version of Phoenix. What is Phoenix? Please,
it's got
help
everything.
Us out. Yeah.
So Phoenix used to be a research project, and they merged, although I still think they work with some of the research folks, but they merged, and the goal is to really help the process of building modern compilers and actually doing things like code analysis. So, and we actually have a clip after this explaining what's going on with Phoenix, but they just released their new SDK. So people that are really into code analysis or want to see deep, deep understanding of their code, mm-hmm. Can definitely download this from Connect Microsoft. And then Charles caught up with Andy Ayers. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. On Phoenix, and here he explains IL code, mm-hmm. which, you know, we're familiar with .NET because we live in our cozy .NET blanket.
Aww.
I'm a wuss. the challenges with actually doing a code analysis with IL is you actually have to, for example, if I want to add numbers, I'd say you'd get an IL operation for like add. Mm-hmm. And really what it would be adding is the last two things on the stack. So, like, you have to know the position of the last two things to know that it's adding the last two things. There's a lot of sort of implicit knowledge. So Andy talks through the differences between IL and the stuff that they build for doing code analysis, which gives you a much deeper view of exactly what's used and when it's used and how it's used all within the code.
I have no idea what you're talking about, so let's roll the clip and get Andy to explain it.
Perfect.
We like to think of Phoenix as a really good form for analysis because all of the manipulation of things in Phoenix IR is explicit in the IR. Mm-hmm. Let me give you an example to tell you what that means. If you look at something like MSIL, when you look at an MSIL instruction, you can't necessarily understand what it does without modeling the state of the MSIL program stack at that point. So you'll look at them and say, oh, there'll just be an opcode like add, and it won't say what the inputs to the add are or where the output's supposed to go. Those things are left implicit. It's implied that you take them from the stack and put the result back on the stack. Mm. So when you look at two instructions in MSIL, it's very difficult for you to say how they're connected to one another without going through a detailed simulation of the stack behavior from one point to another. So although it does describe what the program does, the description is implicit in the model that the machine uses to execute instructions. And Phoenix, on the other hand, if this guy produces an input to this guy, there's a direct connection between one and the other. So it's very easy to sort of trace through these things and do what we would call a data flow analysis and say, how does the value produced here get consumed later on in the program?
Okay, that's much better. Makes a lot more sense.
You don't know what you're talking about.
I still don't know what I'm talking about.
If it's not J-sharp, I don't even follow it. Jeez.
So speaking of Clint, it's time for our picks of the week.
Picks of the week!
So
yes,
this is your pick of the week.
So Clint interviews John Cash from Blizzard Entertainment, and he works on World of Warcraft. So got to give love out. And I tried to interview anybody from Blizzard Entertainment at Game Developer Conference. Yeah, didn't happen. Clint gets on some sailboat. Who knows where the hell he is? And I just happened to run into like the guy that does all hiring for World of Warcraft. Yeah, I don't really play the game. So, I'm taking a bat to his head.
Man, you're a little violent today.
Yeah, oh, I tell you, man.
It's these drawings.
This time I take steroids based on an SMS spam I get. I'll tell you that. So this clip is John talking about what he's still looking for in computer science graduates.
Let's walk the line. Johnny Cash. Yeah, John Cash, Johnny Cash, walk the line.
Yeah, that's great. I'm sure he's never heard that before. get it?
Okay.
So how are we coming out of this?
Okay, nice pick of the week, Dan. Even though Clint gave you $20 to, you know, choose his video, surprise, surprise.
Hey, man, I do what I want.
So my pick of the week, this is Team System Web Access. So
what is Team System Web Access?
Team System Web Access. So we're always hearing from people that say, I want to get access to Team System to update my work items, to, you know, file a bug, file an enhancement request. And
I got to do that at home, actually.
I know. That's a whole other show. But people don't always want to have Team Explorer, which is the client that sits within Visual Studio, in order to make those updates. So Team System Web Access is a product that that we acquired from a company called Team Plane. It's been out for a while, but I wanted to talk about it today because yesterday we just released another version of Team System Web Access. This is the 2008 SP1 Community Technology Preview. And so I installed it yesterday.
There's some great naming, by the way.
Yeah, well, you know, marketing. I installed it yesterday. It takes about 5 minutes. I got it running on a Windows Server 2008 machine. The other really nice thing that is new here is what's called Work Item Web Access. Work Item Web Access is used for the scenario that, let's say that you build an internal corporate application and you've got 1,000 end users, and all those end users want to be able to file bugs and enhancement requests and things like that against Team Foundation Server so that you can track those and continue to rev the application. We made a licensing change in 2008 that allows all those 1,000 users to do exactly that without paying for a client access license for Team Foundation Server.
Awesome.
But in order to do that, there's certain restrictions. Like, you can't give them access to source control in that scenario. They can only get access to their work items to file those bugs and work directly with the developers on a work item.
Sure.
Work Item Web Access is basically a stripped down version of Team System Web Access that allows you to do just that. And so I installed both of them yesterday, like I said, 5-10 minutes, and good to go. Really easy to use.
Easier to install than TFS?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you basically just install it on any server that has IIS, and you point it to your Team Foundation Server. So even if you don't have access to Team Foundation Server within your organization to install applications on that server, which I don't, I just happen to have, you know, access to my projects within Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
But I installed it on another box that I had, and then you can point all your customers to that or all your internal clients to that. And they're good to go.
So we have something called Microsoft Product Feedback Center, PFC, and I think it actually moved over to Connect.
Mm-hmm.
Like when somebody wants to submit a bug or file an idea, if somebody, a startup or ISV, is using Team Foundation server, should they be using that work item web access as their sort of the equivalent of their Bugzilla or for the open source ease?
Well, so they could. The only problem they're going to have in that scenario, though, is that they're going to have to user everybody, right? So, you know, you would have to have a user account in Team Foundation server to be able to access that work item web access. Now, you could create just a guest account and give everybody access to that guest account, but that may not work so well. So, a lot of times...
And is it does it have to be a Windows user, or could it be like a...
It has to be a Windows user.
All right, yeah. We'll get back to you. We'll actually have Brian. I don't know what you're doing this weekend, but you're going to be swamped.
Yeah.
Figuring out an authentication system.
That
Open
works,
ID. Yeah.
Works with SMS, apparently. Yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be SMS-based. I'm not going to...
Yeah. No, but seriously, what a lot of people do in that situation is they build a custom web application, and they use the Team Foundation server web access model, object model, or the web service layer to interject webs...
Yeah, but it'd be great to have, just if it's already built, to already use it. Now, is this stuff released open source, the work item web access, so somebody can take it? And
it's not open source, but there's a configuration file that lets you tweak a bunch of different settings and the way that it works.
Okay, so, and Team System web access, any cost?
No cost for that. You just need to make sure that you have the appropriate client access licenses in place. So if you're using the full-fledged Team System web access, you need to have a CAL. If you're using just work item web access, then you can get away without a CAL.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So, good pick of the weekend. I'm actually going to use that at home once I can figure out my firewall stuff. So,
nice.
Yeah, good stuff. And now we got some upcoming events.
We do. PDC?
Exactly.
Tech Ed?
Yes.
Yep.
All of the above. Maker Fair.
Oh, Maker Fair. When is that?
First week of May.
Great. Cool.
Yeah. We're going to have Jacqueline on the show.
Oh, that's right. Jacqueline's awesome. You're going to love her.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not going to want to see us.
Yeah.
After that, we have... Oh, we're going to be in Amsterdam shooting live from Dev Days.
Sweet.
So,
okay.
I got to find a way to get you there. and then Tech Ed.
That's
in
right.
Orlando.
First week of June,
Tech
I think.
Ed US.
Yeah.
So lots of fun stuff coming up and where you can meet and tease and taunt us in person.
Cool. All right. See you next week.
Thanks.